Good afternoon. This is the Friday Show on KLCC. I'm Rachel McDonald. Lane County Senior Public Health Officer Dr. Patrick Ludke is here in the studio. Hi, Dr. Ludke.
Hello, Rachel. Happy Friday to you.
Thank you. Same to you.
Thank you.
So we have had some hopeful news this week from the White House. President Biden says there will be enough vaccine doses for every American adult by the end of May. And we've got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine already here in Lane County, with more expected later this month. How are vaccinations going in the county?
Well, I agree with you on the good news part, but it's not all good news. So I think the points that you brought up are indeed good news. And we continue to have a horizon that will have more vaccine available to Lane County residents, which is wonderful. That being said, we still don't have enough. So the demand is continuing to far outstrip supply, and that's a challenge. We continue to have people in our communities who want to be vaccinated and want to understand how they can get an appointment, et cetera, and it's a bit of a struggle.
Yeah, we were talking just about the fact that there are a lot of questions about how to get signed up, or questions about, wanting to know when it's your turn. And it sounds like you've had quite a few calls this week at Lane County.
Yeah, that's one of the other side of the coin, right? So we broke records this week on the number of calls. And of course, almost all of them were about vaccine in one way or another. Multiple days, more than 1,000 calls. And I wouldn't say that our call lines were overwhelmed, but people were on hold for too long. And we're going to have some more staff dedicated to that work for next week and the weeks going forward. But gosh, I'm sure there's some frustrated people out there.
Well, we'll try to help as much as we can by answering some of the questions that folks have sent in here to the show. But I just want to start by asking about these variants that we have detected in the new variants of the coronavirus, including one that was found here in Lane County. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I'm happy to. So, the first thing I guess I'd like to say is that viral variants are very common. Gosh, there's a lot of V's in that sentence. And viruses, especially RNA viruses, are not very stable. So DNA viruses and mammals, humans, we have this ability to, when we replicate, when we reproduce, if there's a mutation, we have this proofreading ability that can get rid of the mutation so it doesn't go into our offspring. And that makes, our kids look like us most of the time. It really keeps mutations away. But RNA viruses don't have that. So mutations are just part of their life. That's just what happens. And every virus that's replicating is going to have some mistakes. Many of those mistakes, the virus just dies out. It doesn't confer any benefit. In fact, sometimes it's lethal. But occasionally, you get one of those viral variants, that one mutation or another, that confers some kind of benefit. It's able to live longer on surfaces, or it can live longer in a certain temperature, or it can infect humans more quickly one way or another, and that confers a benefit. And, like Darwin said, the survival of the fittest. So they're absolutely to be expected. The one that we found in Lane County, thanks to the genetics work, the sequencing work at the University of Oregon, is the California variant, which has been really causing challenges down in California. We're lucky it's not one of the other ones that is more severe in terms of both its ability to kind of get around a little bit of the vaccine, not completely, but a little bit, and to cause more severe disease. But ours was the California variant.
Now, the other variant that we heard about this week was the Brazil variant, which was detected in Douglas County, which is our neighbor. So how concerned should we be about that one?
Again, I think that there's several items of maybe good news and several of not so good news. So good for Douglas County to pick that up, to realize that it was in a person who had traveled to Brazil and they may have been at risk and they got a sample. A challenge with that is, we didn't have that tested here locally. It was sent all the way to the CDC lab in Georgia. So the turnaround time to get that test result was several weeks. And in the epidemiology world, data needs to be actionable. And if you don't get a test result for several weeks, well, that's just not actionable data. So that was a challenge. And the other challenge with that is that particular virus does have the ability to make it a little bit harder for the vaccines to work as well. They still appear to work in the limited data that we have. but not quite as well. And the same with the antivirals. So we do have some antiviral medications for COVID-19, and they don't appear to work as well with that particular variant either. So that's a concern, and we want to keep watching that. And thankfully, our state lab, the Oregon State Public Health Lab, or OSPHL, is doing this fancy variant sequencing work, and so is the University of Oregon and Oregon State University to help us understand what's going on the ground.
So we've had lots of questions about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and the fact that it's not as effective at preventing coronavirus infection as the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines. So what can you tell us? You know, what is the argument for going ahead and taking whatever vaccine that's available?
You know, I sometimes wonder if we share too much information without context. But on the other hand, transparency is really important value for all of us in public health. And we need to share what we know and what we don't know. And, you know, so in this particular case, the data has been shared that to prevent COVID disease, symptomatic COVID disease, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine over all of the sites that they did the study was 66% effective. The second bullet, which oftentimes is lost, the second piece of data, some people just kind of turn off when they say it's only 66%. Gosh. But preventing severe disease, and severe disease usually means hospitalization. It can also mean you're on a ventilator, too. The J&J vaccine, Johnson & Johnson vaccine, is 93% effective. And as we all know, and I know people on this show have heard me say many times, 80% of us who get COVID, the infection is so mild, we either don't go to the doctor at all, or we go to the doctor and the symptoms are so mild, we don't even get tested for it. So keep that in mind. What we really should care about the most, not only, but the most, is does it prevent severe disease? And the J&J vaccine is 93% at preventing severe disease, roughly equal to the Moderna vaccine and the Pfizer vaccine for preventing severe disease.
Here's a question we got on voicemail.
This is Ed from Albany. I have a question about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which is a single-dose vaccine, but it is stated to have a less reported efficacy than the other two. Why haven't they got a two-injection trial of Johnson & Johnson? Does anybody know what would happen if they gave two doses, and why hasn't anybody tried that?
He is thinking just like the Johnson & Johnson team. So they do, in fact, have an ongoing phase 3 trial for a second dose. And it's fully enrolled. They have all the people they want on both the control side, the placebo side, and the intervention side of the trial, the people who actually get the vaccine. So we will probably get the results of that trial maybe in the next 6 to 8 weeks. That's what we're hearing from the company. But it's happening, and we're all anxious to see if it gets any better. It can't get much better for preventing severe disease. It's already 93%. But how will it do at preventing symptomatic COVID disease? Be anxious to see those results.
Well, we got an email asking, this is Marilyn sent in this question. She says, I've heard that if you have a severe reaction to bee stings, that you should not get the COVID-19 vaccine. Is this true?
No, that's not true. We want to know if you have a severe reaction so that we can watch you longer. The standard for almost all vaccines is watch people for 15 minutes afterwards. Almost all severe events happen within the first short period of time, 5, 10, 15 minutes. So the standard is you get a measles vaccine, a mumps vaccine, influenza vaccine. We'd like to watch you for 15 minutes. But if you've had a severe anaphylactic, that's kind of a fancy word, but a severe potentially life-threatening reaction, we want to watch you for 30 minutes. Now, if you've had a severe life-threatening reaction to the first dose of a COVID vaccine, we don't want you to get the second dose at all. So that's different than a severe reaction to something like a bee sting or latex. Some people are deathly allergic to latex, which these vaccines don't contain, by the way. So we want to know it, and you can still get the vaccine. We'll just watch you for a longer period of time.
Okay. And we also got an email question. This is from James, who wants to know, after getting a COVID-19 vaccination, how long does it take for immunity to develop? For example, if I get vaccinated on, say, a Thursday, by what day will I have developed immunity to the virus?
So I'm going to give a nuanced response. And again, I know earlier I just said sometimes we give too much information, and maybe I'm going to do it now. But The data submitted to the FDA for the Pfizer vaccine showed that there were neutralizing antibodies, those are the good antibodies that can neutralize the virus, within 7 days after the second dose. That data for Moderna was 14 days after the second dose. And for the J&J vaccine, we're also looking at 14 days. So at one point in time, early on, when the vaccines first were released in December, we didn't have the strong recommendation, is it 7 days? We can say people are probably safe or at least approaching safety. We're 14, depending on the vaccine. And now we're just saying 14 days for all of them, at those three vaccines, because clearly at 14 days, if you're going to develop antibodies, you're going to have those protective antibodies 2 weeks after the second dose for Pfizer and Moderna, or 2 weeks after the single dose for Johnson & Johnson.
Okay, here's another voicemail question.
I'm Tom from Crestwell, and my question is one I think many others will have. Once people are fully vaccinated, for example, my sister and her husband and my wife and I, is it safe to be inside without masks?
Oh, boy. So I think it is a question a lot of people have. What activities can we participate in once we have had the vaccine or the two doses, and we're 14 days after that, when we probably have made protective antibodies? Well, right now, there are far too few people vaccinated to say that the community is protected. Also, there are variants out there we don't know enough about, so we want to make sure that we learn more about those variants before we say the all clear for certain people or for all people. And then finally, we really don't know everything we wish to know about these vaccines in terms of how long the immunity lasts, the absolute level, we call it the titer of the antibody, that provides protection, and its decay rate. That's the long answer. The short answer to the question is, if you are a family unit, you're a cohort, you're together, most of the time, you're eating at home together, etc. You're exposing each other no matter what. If you've both been vaccinated, I think you can spend as much time you want in your house without masks on. That's perfectly fine. Now, in medicine, medicine is complex. And what happens if in that household there's somebody who is really high risk? They're 85 years old, and they're on chemotherapy, and they also have some kind of immune problem like lupus or something. Gosh, that's a really high-risk person. I'm not convinced if someone like that in my family that I would let my guard down. I would still be careful.
Well, it sounds like we have a ways to go until we're at what we would call herd immunity.
Oh, we do. Absolutely. You mentioned at the outset that we heard we're going to have enough vaccine from the Biden administration for adults, you know, by May. We had this plan, get it done by September 1. You probably have heard it before, that we wanted to get all adults vaccinated who wanted a vaccine by September 1st, because we had heard there'd be enough of the vaccine for adults by late summer. Well, now it's been moved up significantly to March 31st by the time we'll have enough vaccine in this country for all adults. So we hopefully, if indeed the pipeline gets filled with vaccine, and if indeed we can get enough needles in arms in Lane County, we will have immunity in adults at a high enough level such that the bulk of that population will be protected. But I really have to say, as a medical epidemiologist, you know, herd immunity is everybody in the herd that roams together. And, you know, adults don't roam on their own. They roam with adolescents and kids. So we have to get vaccines for those groups, too, before we can truly say the community has herd immunity.
You're listening to The Friday Show on KLCC. I'm Rachel McDonald. We're with Lane County Public Health's Dr. Patrick Ludke. And Dr. Ludke, we were just talking about herd immunity. I'm curious if you're still hearing from people who are hesitant about getting the coronavirus vaccine and what you're telling them.
So we are hearing it, but less and less. And, you know, I don't have my ear to every ground, so to speak, but you know, early on, November, December, people wanted to see more data. They wanted to see the response after several million people got the vaccine. And as the data has come out more and more, showing very few severe allergic side effects, no one has had, you know, some untoward crazy response that has frightened people. We're seeing fewer and fewer people who are hesitant. That doesn't mean there are none. Of course, there still are some people who are hesitant. And when that occurs, typically, we in the medical world, we just do an assessment. Are these people who are fence sitters, for lack of a better phrase, they're not sure which side of the fence they want to come down on. They want to get more information for themselves, their family, their loved ones to make a good decision. Or are they fence builders? And no matter what anybody says to them, they've made their decision, they're not going to get vaccinated. And, you know, all of us are fence sitters on some subjects and fence builders on other subjects. If they're, you know, a fence sitter, we still try to provide them all the data that we know and the data that we don't know. And say, we think, as a licensed medical professional, whether you're a nurse practitioner or a physician or a physician assistant, we our recommendation to you as our patient is to get the vaccine. And we'd say the same thing to somebody who is a fence builder, who is really against it no matter what, because we need to share with them the information that we know to be correct. And also the information we don't know. So I don't think there's any fancy tricks other than really trying to understand what the concerns are of the particular patient or the parent of a child who's potentially going to get a vaccine. And in this case, it's COVID. And again, we don't have vaccine for kids, but we do need to get a good sense of understanding and build that bridge.
Okay, here's another question on voicemail.
Hi, this is Jill from Eugene. My question for Dr. Luedtke is, has the recommendation for when to have the second dose of the Moderna vaccine recently been lengthened from 4 weeks to 4 months? What is the recommended timing for the second dose at this time?
So it has been lengthened a bit. I think she said Moderna, is that right?
Yes.
Yes. So
yeah.
Moderna was 28 days. So first dose and then second dose 28 days later. And that was done because that's what the phase 1, 2, 3 trials used. But as we've gained a little more data, not everybody in the trials arrived exactly on day 28. You know, life happens, right? I mean, sometimes you get sick or sometimes you get in a car accident or somebody else does and you have to go care for somebody and you couldn't make it on the exact date. So we've learned a little bit more data. And now the standard recommendation is you can get that second dose up to 42 days after the first dose. Now, that's not ideal. Ideal would be get it at 28 days because that's what we have the most data about. But now we have enough data out to 42 days after the second dose. That's both for Pfizer and Moderna. So it gives a little more flexibility. And again, because sometimes life happens, that gives us the flexibility to still do the right thing and know that it's going to work as best as possible.
Okay, here's an email question from Sarah who says, I understand if you're vaccinated, you can still get COVID-19. If you are vaccinated but do get infected, could you potentially get lingering symptoms that are long-haul symptoms? And does the vaccine prevent long-haul symptoms, even though it doesn't prevent you from being reinfected?
Oh, that's a good question, and we don't have the answer to it.
Okay.
So, you know, we will eventually, I think, but we just don't have the answer now. And yes, indeed, you can get the vaccine. And you can have a very mild infection despite being vaccinated, and you may not even know that you got infected. And potentially you could pass it on to somebody else despite being vaccinated. But our initial fears that it could happen, you know, a fair amount of times, 20, 30, 40% of people have been diminished or have been made better, depending on your point of view. We are seeing more data that people who are vaccinated do not get infected nearly as much as we had thought or nearly as much as we had worried. So that's really heartening. But if you've been vaccinated and you do in fact get infected, the whole long haul question, we don't know the answer to it. So I think that's a great question.
Okay. Well, here's one I'm going to try to shorten this. This is from Lynn, another email regarding how people are prioritized if they are, for example, their age group comes up. Her question is, do they prioritize in each group? She says, my 96-year-old neighbor pre-registered the first day of the registry and didn't receive her first dose until February 20th. And then a 72-year-old neighbor received hers the week before. So wondering just how this goes in terms of the order. And I don't know if this is something you can answer.
Well, I can give a general experiential reply. How's that?
That sounds good.
So we have these priority groups. Within the priority group, let's just say a few weeks ago we started with 80 and above. Anybody 80 and above, whether or not you're as healthy as can be and maybe even still working full-time. Boy, I don't want to be working full-time when I'm 80. But somebody as healthy as can be or somebody who's really quite sick, you're still in the same priority section of that group. So that's the first part. The second part, and I've lost my trend of thought. I wonder what that was. Well, I think we'll stop there.
Okay. Well, here's another question. Somebody was asking about people who are homeless in Lane County. What is the process for them to get vaccinated?
So the process is really the same for the other ways to sign up, right? So if they have access to internet, or they can use the library or whatever, they may have access one way or another. Some people do. When I go to tent camps and such, I'm amazed the number of people who have smartphones. They can go onto our website, Lane County Public Health, and they click on that yellow band that goes across the top of the page that says coronavirus. And on the right-hand side, so you click on that, and then you get a new screen. On the right-hand side is the button that is for vaccine information and pre-registration. You just click on that and fill out the forms. If they don't have that, they can call our call center. So I know I've shared the number before. It's 541-682-1380. Again, 541-682-1380. And then I will finish with... there are other groups that are doing this work. So, for example, Whitebird, the Whitebird Clinic, works a great deal with the houseless population, and we are sharing vaccine with Whitebird, and they're vaccinating a whole lot. So consider the other places where you go for some of your care already, and that would include Whitebird or Volunteers in Medicine, etc.
We did get a couple questions about people jumping the line. Is that an issue here in Lane County, people jumping the line to get vaccinated?
You know, I think the numbers are really, really small. We have an occasional person who might lie about their birth date or might not tell the truth about where they work, whether they're a healthcare worker or not. But our estimate, after giving, you know, tens of thousands of doses, those numbers are tiny. So, you know, I would hate to make a big deal out of a, you know, far less than 1% problem.
Okay. Well, we're going to wrap things up in just a moment, but Dr. Ludke, anything else that you'd like to share as we continue in this pandemic?
Yeah, so I remembered what I wanted to say before. Okay. You know, my chain of thought, my trend of thought was gone. And it was one of the problems that we're seeing with notifying people once they've signed up to get a vaccine is sometimes when we send out the notice, hey, we have a clinic coming up, we have space, you're signed up, please choose your time. You know, does it fit your life at 11 a.m. or 3 p.m.? That's up to you to choose. Sometimes that goes to people's spam in their email. And we've seen that more times than we'd like to see. And people will call us up and say, we were never notified. And we say, well, we sent it on this date. Can you check your spam? And there it is. So if you haven't heard anything, just do that one extra step. Look in your spam filter, whether it's at work or at home. See if our email, our notification, ended up somewhere where it shouldn't be.
And again, that phone number is 541-682-1380, and it sounds like you'll be boosting the staffing for next week.
Yes, indeed. We need to get down that length of call time quite a bit.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Ludke.
You're most welcome.
Dr. Patrick Ludke is Lane County Senior Public Health Officer. And you can send your questions for next week's Friday show to news@klcc.org as an email or voicemail or voice memo. And you can also leave us a voicemail at 503-877-3198. We had production help from Angela Kellner. I'm Rachel McDonald. Enjoy your weekend.